Ooh.
That could be why my sound was not so good. BitTorrent was open.
I don't understand, Paul. What would you be BitTorrenting?
Porn.
Are you burning the disc for your mom?
Happy Mother's Day. Man, I need a mom. Paul's mom joke for Mother's Day.
I think the only other book that I read last week that I think bears mention, but I know I'm the only one who read it, was Stormwatch number 19.
Oh yeah, you are.
And I don't need to say anything about it.
Was it worth reading?
Fuck yes. In fact, I picked it up because 20 is the book that came out last week.
Oh, okay.
But 19 is the first issue that Jim Starlin was on.
Yeah.
And oh my God, it's a good book.
Is it? All right. Yeah. I'll pick it up. I was curious about it, but you never can tell with Starlin.
No, it really works. It is DC's answer to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Really?
Yeah. Very enjoyable.
They need to hype it a little bit more then.
Yeah, I would agree.
Man, none of those characters interest me, but Jim Starlin.
Aaron, do we wish to chat about Thanos Rising number 2?
How long is he rising? When is it Thanos rose?
I believe
that's the appropriate timeline for that. You know, it's just a setup, for Christ's sake.
Well, if he's rising for longer than 4 hours, he's supposed to go see a doctor.
Then it's Thanos waning.
I do kind of like, though, that they're kind of reimagining the character and with his roots as a serial killer.
Yeah, that was interesting.
He's not just Thanos. He's Dexter Thanos. You know,
he really is.
Yeah.
Can we reimagine Wayne then?
I think that's probably a best practice.
Okay.
Let's... Dexter Wayne? I would be okay with that.
I don't really
know
so much as a reimagining as a reveal.
Oh, there we go.
That's what happens down in that basement of his. He wears his Scarlet Spider hoodie and, murders people. That's what Wayne does. With great power comes great responsibility. Cut, cut, cut.
Have a big S on their chest.
That's right.
Okay, we need to stop this line of conversation.
because it's too close to home. Sounds too real. This is a possibility.
I don't want it to be the bumper.
Too late. With Aaron, Polly, and Tim. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Tim.
Wow.
We are dropping like flies.
Tell you what, you know, 5 guys go to St. Louis, only 3 return.
I think the other 2 are still hungover.
Quite possibly.
So, I'm still hungover. I'm here. What the fuck?
Well, you know, it's professionalism is what it is.
Yeah, work ethic, so. Tim.
Tim, you're committed. Other guys, not so much.
Yeah, I guess.
Which is why we're promoting you to senior intern.
I thought I was already senior intern.
Oh, no. You were assistant senior intern.
Intermediate intern.
When do I get a VP up in this bitch?
Oh, that's coming. That's coming.
Yeah, you kill one of us. Really, that's the only way.
Pretty soon, if you keep up this kind of hustle, I think that you will very soon move up to the regional office. That's what I'm thinking.
Hey, so, who's third in line when all of us are here? Is it Wayne?
Fuck Wayne. No, I mean, he doesn't do the intro. My name is said third. I think I am. He might have
third, or is it Tim? Oh, okay.
That's right.
You've hit the glass ceiling, Tim.
Which is one of the cards I gave you when you were playing Cards Against Humanity. I turned to Aaron and says, "Does this make me a racist that I give Paul this card?"
Yes, Tim.
I won,
yes,
though. It did.
Funny. So, a couple of weeks ago, Star Trek The Next Generation's Best of Both Worlds was out at movie theaters in its newly high digital restoration. Not sure if restoration is the right word, but
I think it is. I mean, they had to restore it from the original prints.
But it was never HD, so I don't know that you can restore it to something it never has been.
This is true.
So
conversion? Let's go.
Upgrade? I don't know. Refit?
It's just really important. Continue.
Probably not. But, you know, they went back and cleaned up all of the prints and, you know, provided some additional CGI special effects and edited Best of Both Worlds Parts 1 and 2 into a feature-length movie, which they had at one of those, you know, special movie events. And so all around the country, you could go and see it on one special night. And the Blu-ray came out this week. And while I didn't go to the theaters to see it, I did get the Blu-ray. And oh my God, it's gorgeous.
Okay. Two questions.
Sir.
Okay. So the first question is, I don't know what episodes these are.
Okay.
Is this in and of itself Blu-ray movie worthy?
Yes. The episodes are the first and second part of the Borg episodes where Captain Picard gets kidnapped by the Borg and turned into Locutus.
It's the introduction of the Borg, isn't it?
No, it's the follow-up, because the first one, the first Borg episode was Q-Who, where Q throws him off into deep space to meet the Borg for the first time. So this is, you know, at the end of that episode, you know, they get thrown back to regular space and Guinan says, you know, but the Borg know you're out here. And Picard's like, oh shit, so they're going to be coming. So a year later, the Borg arrive. And so, you know, you've got Lieutenant Shelby Lieutenant Commander Shelby who has been assisting with the Borg Buster projects and, you know, trying to get the fleet ready for all this stuff. And of course, we're not ready. We thought there'd be more time. And of course, there wasn't more time because, you know, the Borg are relentless. And
Are they out of time, Aaron?
They're a Borg out of time. Not Borg out of time. How's that?
Sweetness.
So if you've seen any of the original series HD improvements, you know, they went in and they put in brand new CGI up to and including replacing effects. So, you know, you had the old model effect of the Starship Enterprise, and they'd put in a CGI model instead and just make it much more dynamic and beautiful on your TV screen. While they did go and reshoot some of the CGI effects, they didn't change anything. So it still looks – you know, it's still the same Enterprise models, but they have, you know, gone through and improved some of the explosions and laser effects and all that kind of stuff. It is absolutely stunning.
Is any of that stuff distracting, though, from the,
not at
the
all.
Quality of the episode now?
No, not at all. I got to tell you, the sound and the picture is just amazing all the way through. You know, I've been watching Next Generation streaming on Netflix, and when you compare those things side by side, it is a night and day difference. You know, it is. You know, I've had a hard time watching some of that Next Generation stuff because the video effects have not aged very well.
No, that's my second question. You think they're trying to build up enough money to bring back more of these so that they can package it in a?
Oh yeah,
remastered.
They've already done seasons 1, 2, and 3to re-release on Blu-ray, and their plan is to do all 7 seasons of Next Generation and then move on to Deep Space Nine. And that's what I'm particularly excited about is the CGI HD improvements on Deep Space Nine. So
I would buy an entire Quark Deep Space Nine.
DVD. Oh yeah, yeah. No, I just got to say, having watched it, I was just amazed at number one how well it holds up because it's been like 20 years since these episodes, and the effects are just amazing. And I was very amused by one thing because, you know, at the end of the part one cliffhanger, you know, Locutus is, you know, Picard's turned into Locutus. The Enterprise is unsuccessful in, you know, defeating the Borg or stalling the Borg. You've got, you know, Riker as commander of the ship, and you've got, you know, this new Shelby person that looks like she's going to become first officer. And, you know, the question that everybody was asking that summer is, oh my God, you know, how do they get out of this? Is Patrick Stewart actually coming back, you know? And so they were talking about in the DVD commentary where Michael Piller was the guy who wrote that episode. And he was actually running the writing room during that period. And everyone's like, well, what's your solution for this? And he's like, don't have one. I quit. So he wrote him into this corner and then left the show. And then Gene Roddenberry convinced him to come back. But, you know, there's that period of time where, you know, the writer who wrote the problem wasn't going to be part of the solution. I just thought
nice.
Hysterical. You know, it's like mic dropping. Boom. I'm out. I liked it. Anyway, I highly recommend it. If you like Star Trek The Next Generation, pick up the Best of Both Worlds Blu-ray because it is fan-freaking-tastic. And some nice extras to it. There's some nice bonuses on the Blu-ray, up to and including a gag reel that has Worf flubbing his lines and going, fuck! which I found particularly amusing.
I will have to pick it up. I'm excited about it. I was going to see it in theaters, but I just didn't get a chance. So I'm really looking forward to checking out the Blu-ray and enjoying it. The updated special effects really just sound interesting to me.
Well, and you know, on the subject of Star Trek, Paul, Star Trek Into Darkness comes out this week.
Are you going on Wednesday night?
I am going on Wednesday night. Got my tickets to the fan screening.
What did you say, Tim?
I was just going to say that we need to go to St. Louis again so we can watch Fast and Furious 6 together, Paul.
Yeah, no joke. I'm actually seeing that Tuesday.
God.
I got advance tickets to see that on Tuesday.
I might go see that before I see Star Trek. I gotta be honest.
Now, what? Paul, have you been to Walmart and Target to get your Fast and Furious you know, toys? And
yeah, I'm building up my Fast and Furious collection. I got my Ben Diesel there. I just painted the Rock WWE action figure with a jacket on him. So
Fast and
Furious action figure.
It's like I need to go to the I need to watch it in a theater that has the dine-in so I can eat a steak while The Rock and Vin Diesel are talking to each other. Yes, manpower.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too much fire to handle.
Well, you know, if you guys are going to meet in St. Louis, you know, to go see Fast and Furious, you know, do we maybe need to have some kind of Indiegogo project to pay for you guys getting there?
I think so. Pay for my dinner.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that I need to have a Kickstarter to get my goddamn business cards around here. And I think the you know, the $5 level, if you contribute $5, I will give you one of the business cards that I made.
And for $10,
that's not the worst Kickstarter I heard about today.
Yeah. So you know, there are a group of, I'm going to throw this up in air quotes, role-playing game industry professionals, end of air quotes, that, you know, are trying to get to Gen Con. And, you know,
do we need to define role-playing game professionals?
I think we do. I think that because I believe that we might be using the term loosely.
Okay.
So over on Indiegogo.com, there is a new, you know, shared funding, crowdfunding initiative there. And I'll read you just a little bit from the site. Conventions, it says, like Gen Con and PaizoCon, are the heart of the role-playing game industry. They provide networking opportunities, education, and direct fan contact time that keep industry professionals connected, energized, and inspired. We are Christina Stiles, Amanda Heyman, and Owen Casey Stevens. Together, we have more than 25 years' experience in the gaming industry, and we'd like to share that experience with the fans and other professionals that attend Gen Con and PaizoCon, and to have the opportunity to learn from and connect with the gamers and gaming industry attendees there. What we need. We're asking for $3,600 in travel expenses, which include airfare, hotels, and meal assistance. And then if you bid in, there's like some electronic PDF bundles of game stuff. There's an industry insider program where you can, you know, chat with these industry insiders, you know, such as Christina Stiles, Amanda Heyman, Owen Casey Stevens. And that, I think, is my point here. Who the fuck are these people? You know, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Did you manage to get to Fear the Con on your own?
Yeah, you know, I saved a little dough and went. And I'd imagine that's probably the best way to do it, to save some cash.
And Tim, did you manage to get to Fear the Con on your own?
That's why I got the second job, so I could do what I want to do.
Yeah, and I managed to get to Fear the Con on my own. It never occurred to me to have somebody else pay my way. And you know, hats off. Begging seems to be the way to get this shit done. You know, you just put your hat out there, or perhaps your tin cup, you know, and you too can get to Gen Con.
Well, let me say this. I've been to Gen Con a few times.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I need $3,600 to get to Gen Con.
Well, but there's three of them here. So.
Okay. I don't think I need $1,200 to get to Gen Con. I've done Gen Con on 400.
Yeah, but they have to fly.
Well, life sucks for them.
I'm not justifying it. Have they been funded?
No, they're at $1,200 of their worth.
Who are these people? Get some money.
I don't know. And you know,
I want their address. I'm going to write a sad letter.
I don't get it. I honestly don't. I saw this pimped earlier in the week, and I was like, seriously? There are so many better ways to spend your money. You know?
Get Tim to Oklahoma is coming soon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't get this. And
For $1,200, you can fund yourself going to Gen Con.
Okay.
And you can write your own blog and write your own stories.
All right. So here's what I'm going to say. If Ed Greenwood, I know you guys know who that is, said, hey, I'm broke this year. I want to go to Gen Con and, you know, talk about, you know, Forgotten Realms, and I'll run a game for you or something like that. I'd at least see it a little bit.
You know,
I don't know who these people are.
If you had some kind of horrible disease and you might not ever get to go to another Gen Con and you can't afford to go to Gen Con right now, yeah, I might pitch in. But you know what you do when you can't fucking afford to go to the convention? You don't go. That's what you do.
I like how their pitch is, it's our chance to hobnob and get more jobs. So we're going to pay you to try to further your career, which you should be doing yourself anyways.
No, I think that what they are demonstrating is that begging, or panhandling, as we like to call it, is an effective way to get work.
Well, and I'd be curious if they and I don't question anyone's integrity, but
no, Aaron and I are going to do that in a second.
Yeah, but are they given permission to hand out these PDFs of games?
Mm.
That they're making their reward goals.
These different RPG companies have donated the PDFs.
They have. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're not just.
Well, then why didn't the RPG companies? I don't know. It's just surprising to me.
I find the whole thing a little distasteful.
Agreed.
You know, it seems to me unseemly. You know, it's asking for a handout for something that, you know, I'm sorry. You either save your money, you figure out how to get there, that doesn't involve asking for a handout. And I'm having a hard time seeing this as anything other than that.
It's especially important to me and Amanda that gamers see there are women designers in the industry, and the gamers get a chance to meet and game with some women industry professionals. You know, and I'm not a small guy myself, so this fits me. It's kind of like the guy who was fat and got himself thin, and he's like, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the Weight Watchers and show people that they can lose weight too. How about you just put down the fork, fatty? God damn it. It's like these people have the power to empower themselves, but I'm going to be the one that changes their life because I did it. Well, because if they had it in themselves, they would just do it.
This is just all very weird to me.
I would. How many days are left in this?
24 days.
Too many.
24. So they've only been up there a week, and they're already at a quarter of their goal.
Correct.
They're going to get funded.
Yeah. If this funds, I don't care what kind of bullshit one we do. We have to do one. I don't care. Like, we, you know what we could do, Aaron? We could put Rainsboro Season 2 on ransom.
There you go.
Season 2 is coming when you pay for Aaron to go to Gen Con.
Wade just punched his desk.
But I have to say, it bugs me. It just bugs me. It seems rather tacky. But, you know, I don't want to talk – this is bumming me out. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I want to talk about the most awesome weekend in gaming, which was Fear the Con 6.
Agreed.
I got to tell you, you know, I know that Andrew and Wayne aren't to hear this, but, you know, I'll tell it to you guys. I missed you guys by the time I was at the airport heading out of town. I mean, I had and continue to have year over year just the best time every time I go up there to St. Louis. You guys are just fantastic guys. And the folks there at Fear the Con are just some of the best people to hang out with. I just had a fantastic time.
Except last year. Last year wasn't that great.
No, last year may have been the best year, and I wonder why that could have been. What was different?
Mind-altering substances?
Possibly.
Oh, God, there was a lot of mind-altering substances.
But, yeah, we had a big time. You know, me, Paul, Tim, Andrew, Wayne, Thistledown, John, lots of others all there playing games for 2 days and drinking and acting foolish. It was a good time. The only complaint I have about this year's trip is it rained the entire freaking time from the time I got off the plane to the time I got back on the plane. Rain. And, you know, Tim, because none of our Missouri hosts had the balls to be on this week's show and take their lumps about the weather, I'm afraid you're going to have to be that guy.
What?
You're the guy that you're the closest guy to St. Louis, so we're going to hold you responsible.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, by the same token, Paul, I blame you for everything going on in D.C. And Aaron, what's up with your immigration issue? Seriously. So I'll tell you what.
There's logic
there,
actually.
we went to the zoo. It was the Thursday before the wing night. We went to the zoo, and it was beautiful weather up until we got to the car, and then it started raining, and then it didn't stop. It was pretty bad. There was no Fear of the Cigars unless you wanted to huddle outside like a canopy like some people were doing, which is just phenomenally ridiculous to me.
Right.
But, yeah, there wasn't any cigars to be had.
No, it was really quite disappointing. I brought a gross of cigars with me to share, and we didn't get to spark up a single one. But I did get to bring a pie all the way from Dallas through DFW International Airport, through Lambert Field, to give to one Mikey Mason, the comedy rock star.
That's a little bullshit, just so you know, Aaron.
What do you mean? What? I don't understand.
We deal with your ass every week.
Uh-huh.
Mikey Mason writes a couple of songs, releases a couple of albums, and you make him a pie.
It's more important than that, Paul. He calls in to make fun of you.
That's right. That's right. That is his payment for the yeah. Paul's mom jokes.
Yeah, this is the carrot that we give to people that do that.
You have to see what I give to Wayne. I give Wayne a ton of stuff. Wayne gets a check every month.
I just want a pie. I just want a piece of pie.
The reason why Mikey got a pie is that he asked for it.
So did I.
No, not so much.
Can I have a pie?
I will hook you up with a pie, Paul.
Great. Now I have to wait a year.
Or longer, because Fear the Con 7, they're looking at maybe a June date.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Well, apparently May is hard for people that are in school, you know, people in the colleges and what all.
We don't like them anyway. No,
I think it's incentive for those people to get out of school.
I would agree. Or to drop out. Well, yeah.
Either way works.
Yeah.
You know, you have a full year, take extra classes, and graduate early.
Exactly. Done.
So
Doogie Howser did it. You can do it too.
Listen, we have pull over there. We will shut this shit down.
Because we do have pull.
They did it last time. They had it in March, and they're like, "Hey, we're moving into May," and it's like, "Oh, good. It's going to be 15 months or whatever." Right.
We did have a little pull again. We had a funny books room at Fear the Con that we locked half the time.
That worked out pretty well. I got to tell you, the recording quality on those APs is pretty damn sweet.
Jesus Christ.
Now, I ran year six of my And a Little Child Shall Eat Them game. And I have to tell you, you know, I pass out characters, you know, in the game. And it was not my intent, I promise, to give Wayne the double amputee for the zombie apocalypse. It was not my intent. I promise. I know it seems that it was.
Aaron, if you'd have just given him an electric wheelchair, I swear to God, I'd have thrown him under the bus. I wouldn't have just left his ass. I'd have thrown him under the bus.
Well, I think he chose not to have an electric wheelchair, if I remember correctly.
He did. Well, he chose.
Probably a good choice on his part. God damn.
No, I absolutely had a blast at Fear the Con. And I actually am halfway through writing up my review for the site. So I'm sure that'll be up sometime in the next year.
Yeah. Sometime before Fear the Con 7, we'll have a Fear the Con 6 retrospective.
All the pictures will be in black and white.
I may have been writing mine up too. So.
Well, I got to say, we played in some terrific games. You know, Tim ran his Dresden game, which was a hoot and a half. And Andrew ran the Atomic Robo beta RPG. And I know we talked about this in last week's show. But each of those games was just amazing. John's chill game. I had a blast. It was a really good time. And, you know, there was Iron Man 3. So
there was Iron Man 3.
Now, did you see it on Sunday, Tim?
Yeah. So the plan was that Wayne and I were going to go see it on Sunday. And when we got there Sunday, the 2D that we were going to go to was sold out. And there wasn't another 2D until, I think it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We're like, there's no way we're waiting until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We've got 8-hour drive.
Right.
And so we told Wayne that we were hosed, and we went and saw the 3D version because it was not sold out. I think you guys went to the same theater because it was the Dine-In Theater.
Yeah.
That was – like Juanita's like taking pictures of this because this is just like – what the hell is this?
Just, it is stupid cool, the Dine-In Theater.
So first of all, a regular movie theater is fucking ruined now.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's just – it's like meh.
Yeah. So this AMC Dine-In Theater, you know, they have – nice big plush seats. Forgive me.
Recliners.
Electric recliners. You press the button and it goes and put your feet up and you lie back.
You know, the only thing that would improve that experience is if they were electric massage chairs as well.
Actually, Wade said the only thing that would improve the experience was a Hummer.
You have to order off the menu on that one. And you press a little button, and they bring you food and alcohol to your chair. And you're right. Regular movie theaters, not the same.
That said, I would go there's movies that would be like, is it AMC drive-in worthy? If I had one of those, it's like, just go see it in a matinee where it's like $6, you know?
So what'd you think of Iron Man
3? Like Star Trek Into Darkness or whatever.
What'd you think of Iron Man 3, Tim?
I thought it was okay. I don't have any complaints about it. I think they had to try to do something a little bit different because how many times are you going to see Iron Man blowing the shit out of stuff?
Right.
And I think they accomplished that. Every scene that they had that like 10-year-old kid in was just magic.
I agree. And I usually find child actors irritating. Mm-hmm. But I thoroughly enjoyed that kid on screen. The whole thing where he's like, yeah, and then, you know, my dad should be back any minute now. He went out for, you know, a pack of smokes or scratchers. He went out for scratchers. You know, that was 6 years ago. And Tony Stark's reaction to, well, there's no need to be a pussy about it. Holy shit. I loved it. Loved it.
Yep. You know what I'm thinking right now? Where's my tuna fish sandwich? No, I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting. I'm not a Gwyneth Paltrow kind of doesn't. Yeah, but you know, I'll deal.
I don't know. I was pretty happy with how much of her belly we got to see. That was all right. That was a good time. I've got that and her legs from Avengers on a continual loop right now. So I'm good.
In the bank.
Yes. Yes.
So how was your guys' experience with that?
I loved Iron Man 3. I thought Iron Man 3 was a hoot and a half. And
I wouldn't say I loved it. I will say that the theater definitely increased my enjoyment of the movie.
Well, and Paul and I disagree. I love the soundtrack. In fact, I got home and downloaded the soundtrack immediately.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I mean, I downloaded it in the hotel room so I could listen to it on the plane. That's what I did. I really, really enjoyed the soundtrack.
I guess I really didn't notice the sound. Hmm.
Did you stay for the end credits?
Yeah.
I just thought the end credit music was just brilliant.
The little 70s music? No, I didn't like that.
It was very much Mission Impossible meets Hawaii 5-0. It was great. Loved it. Loved it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with Paul on that one.
Yeah, you guys don't know what's good.
Aaron, you're outnumbered. Andrew was with me on that one.
Yeah.
Well, one too.
That's why Thistledown John will be joining the cast because he agreed with me.
Funny books with Aaron and Johnny.
Uh-huh. Aaron and Thistledown Johnny.
So all this talk about gaming, we have yet to talk about any comic books.
Well, and last weekend was Free Comic Book Day.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? We're out there in the middle of Missouri. Missouri, that's how they say it. And, you know, playing the role-playing games. And
only if they're pretentious, Aaron.
Is that what they say?
That's kind of how I feel.
That's right. Well, Free Comic Book Day is going on, and there was even a comic book store right around the corner. And Tim may have sent his wife out on a comic book run.
I delegate some tasks sometimes that I feel that are below my station. Or she volunteered one of the two.
Yeah, well, it's one of those. I get fuzzy on which.
Couldn't remember, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Free Comic Book Day was last week. And there were a couple of books.
There were a couple of good books. There were a lot of books. There were only a couple of good ones. So we're not going to go into every book in detail. We've done that in previous years, but this year was a little lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
There were definitely some quality books, but nothing on par with some of the previous years.
All right. So Paul, what did you like out of Free Comic Book Day?
Well, let me start with the big issue for me, which was DC's book. Before I get into the happy stuff, DC basically, you know, they put out this reprint of the first chapter of the Geoff Johns, Richard Donner, Adam Kubert, Last Son book of the Superman. And so they put out the first chapter as the Free Comic Book Day book. Keep in mind, the book is not only pre-52 and features a Mary Lois and Clark. You know, it's probably a good 6 years old at this point. That was post-Infinite Crisis.
Huh.
Not only that, you know, they advertised it as having a preview of the new Superman Unchained by Scott Snyder and Jim Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just an interview. It wasn't a preview. It was just text. It wasn't actually a preview of the book. So so basically the book is a reprint with an interview at the end. Very disappointing. And I know I can't complain. It's a free book. That being said, Marvel put out a completely original book. I should correct myself. Mostly original book called Infinity, leading up to their upcoming crossover. The Free Comic Book Day book was by Jonathan Hickman with art by Jim Chung. Featured reprint at the back of, I guess, Thanos' first appearance. And, you know, though the book itself wasn't my favorite, I mean, at least it was mostly new content, beautiful art. But, I mean, the standouts for me this year were few. I mean, Atomic Robo was good as always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
Little sad there was no Dr. Dinosaur in it, but I know the next Atomic Robo series is called like the Savage Sword of Dr. Dinosaur, so they're probably saving him for that.
I got to tell you, every time I read an Atomic Robo book, I don't understand why there's not an Atomic Robo live action movie.
Maybe one day.
It seems like it's a license to print money. Just saying.
Or even an animated something. I actually kind of enjoyed Beware the Batman. It wasn't great, but it was a preview of the upcoming series.
Right.
And so I'm curious about that one. I mean, there was a Mouse Guard book that I have yet to read, and a couple of other stories that I've yet to read. I did read Aphrodite 9 from Top Cow.
You know, I tried to read Aphrodite 9, and I did not enjoy the writing on the book, but I will say that Stepan Sayich's artwork, as always, is brilliant.
Yeah, it's definitely among his best.
Yeah, I just kind of enjoyed it as a flip book. I could not get into the story, and I don't know why I couldn't get into the story, but I just couldn't. But the pages were just lovingly drawn.
There was a lot of text. There was a lot of telling, not showing.
Well, and it did feel an awful lot like I'm drawing a blank on his creator-owned book that he did.
Ravine.
Thank you. I was thinking Ravenous, and I knew that wasn't right. Ravine. And, you know, I really enjoyed how pretty that book was, but it did feel, you know, a little wordy. And that's
chewy.
That's how I felt about this as well.
Yeah, but Aphrodite 9 was written by Matt Hawkins.
Right.
You know, I just, again, it felt a little bit like an information dump for the first half of the issue. It does pick up in the last half of the issue, but definitely beautiful art. And out of the free comic books that I've read so far, you know, probably one of the better ones, and one you can get digitally on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
And Prince Valiant you can get on Comixology as well.
Well, and I read that one, and, you know, Prince Valiant's one of those books that I've always wanted to like, you know, because Hal Foster can draw the ass out of some comics. These were not actually intended for the comic book page. These were actually, you know, your Sunday comic book strips, and you know, would tell great big chunks of story in, you know, half a page worth of a comic book, of a newspaper page. And so they're putting all of these Prince Valiants into, you know, archive hardback editions. And so I picked this up because, like I said, I've always wanted to enjoy Prince Valiant, but I ran into the same problem that I always run into on Prince Valiant, and it's the character Prince Valiant and how the character is drawn. He's supposed to be this, you know, strong, you know, Prince of the North in the age of King Arthur, and he looks like a woman. I mean, he doesn't just kind of look like a woman. He looks almost exactly like a woman. You know, the haircut, the way he's colored. You know, he's got, you know, these rosy cheeks and a delicate chin line. I mean, he looks like a chick. And if
where is Andrew when we have these gender confusion situations?
Everything else in the story is just gorgeously illustrated, and I love the way the story is told, and it's very entertaining. But wow, I can't get past Prince Valiant. Did you take a look at it at all, Paul?
Yeah, I've taken a look at it. You know, I've never really been a Prince Valiant fan, so I mean, is it just like a Knights of the Round Table type thing?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a, you know, journeying through Europe and the Americas, apparently, from time to time, during the age of King Arthur. And, you know, Prince Valiant's father is, you know, is king of his region. But all these, you know, royal men just look a little girly to me.
See, I got to say, I'm not a big fan of that art style. And it's not that I don't recognize that it can be good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not my thing. It reminds me of, like, you know, your 1950s Nancy Worth, whatever her name is. You know what I'm saying?
Nancy Drew, Mary Worth.
Dick Tracy kind of stuff going on, and it's just not my thing.
I've got a big appreciation for the style. Like everybody else, like the Vikings that he's drawing and whatnot, I mean, are all, you know, appropriate and enjoyable, but wow, I just have a problem with Prince Valiant himself.
You know, speaking of art problems, I do want to talk about one of the two Marvel books. Which was the more kid-centric one, Hulk and the Agents of Smash and Avengers Assemble.
Uh-huh.
So these are previews of their new upcoming series. It says Hulk and the Agents of Smash comes on August 11th, and it doesn't say when Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, or Avengers Assemble, excuse me, starts up again. But these are – oh, May 26th is when Avengers Assemble starts. But they're screenshots of the cartoon with word balloons on them. They're not like original art, and they're not even good screenshots. They're like low res screenshots. It's very poorly put together. I was really disappointed in that, because I was curious as to how the TV shows looked, and the answer is not good.
Yeah.
But you know, going back to Infinity, seems to be taking a cue from the Marvel movie universe, because, you know, this very much presents Thanos in the same manner as the Avengers movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, he sits atop a throne and he orders people to do his bidding. This isn't the same Thanos we've been seeing, you know, in cornfields and stuff over the last 10, 20 years. He's definitely more of a badass character, and, you know, he has new acolytes who do his bidding for him. And Jonathan Hickman is kind of getting ready for this Infinity crossover that starts in August in the pages of his Avengers book.
Right.
And Avengers number 11 came out this week, featuring art by my favorite artist, Mike Diodato.
I know you're being sarcastic there, Paul, but you can't tell me that Mike Diodato doesn't draw a badass Shang-Chi.
Yeah, I am not going to – you know, I'm actually going to say the art on this issue was not that bad.
And I'm going to correct you and say that the artwork was awesome. I need a Mike Diodato drawn Shang-Chi book on a monthly basis.
Oh no, I won't buy that. And I like Shang-Chi.
God, it was so good. This book was so good.
I don't know. We've talked about Jonathan Hickman's Avengers stuff,
uh-huh.
And his storytelling style isn't connecting with me much on this.
You know, it felt very Secret Avengers to me. In fact, I had to keep going back to make sure I wasn't reading Secret Avengers.
Very much so.
You know, but I did love. Natasha, you know, the Black Widow, you know, questioning the plan on how they were going to infiltrate this group. And she goes, wouldn't it be easier if I seduced Deeds, brought him back here, and then pulled his fingernails out one by one until he gives us what we want? And the look of horror on you know, everybody's faces, you know, just like, what is wrong with you? I just thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, you know, I didn't dislike the book. It just wasn't – I don't know. Something about it didn't click with me. And it had some great character moments, especially with Sam, Sunspot, and Cannonball.
Yeah.
You know, getting drunk with the AIM guys.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Well, and you know, what's hysterical is that – what's Sunspot's name?
Roberto?
Roberto.
Yeah, Roberto. So, you know, they're partying with the AIM guys because they say, you know, look, we're going to be enemies today. We're going to be enemies tomorrow. Why don't we save the fight for tomorrow and have a good time tonight? And so they're like, oh, let's do that. And they have to tie up Doug, you know, because Doug, the AIM guy, doesn't want to party with the Avengers. And he's the only one who doesn't. So they've got Doug tied up. And there's this great scene where, you know, you've got, you know, Sam and Roberto, and they're all drinking, having a good time, and they're talking to the AIM guys. And Roberto goes, hey, why don't you knock off this AIM business and come work for me? And you can be my supervillain double agent. And he says, are you serious? And Sam goes, yeah, he's rich. He can do that for you. And they're like, yeah, we could do that. And then both of the AIM guys turn and look at Doug. Well, we'd have to do something about Doug here. And Doug being tied up is like, fuck. It was hysterical. I thought this was a great book. And that there's all these cut scenes to Shang-Chi fighting the bad guys. And, you know, he's been kicking ass and getting his ass kicked. And there's the moment where the nunchucks come out. And I mean – I thought this book was beautifully drawn, and I really got a kick out of the story. I love this. I know you didn't, Paul, but I didn't love it,
but I did like it. Yeah, and you're right. It had a very, very much a Warren Ellis Secret Avengers feel to it.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, you know, is the series going to continue? Because the last couple of issues have all been done in ones.
Yeah. Well, I think it's continuing to move the story forward about all the bad stuff that's going on. For instance, you know, Shang-Chi took the Chimera's head, you know, and, you know, apparently has something to say. You know, it seems our friends at AIM are gearing up for a war.
You know, the Chimera, is that a Secret Warriors thing? I think it is.
It does. I think so, because it harkens back to Gorgon and all that kind of stuff. It reminded me a great deal of Secret Warriors. Yeah. Which, of course, Hickman worked on as well.
Yeah, so maybe my issues were primarily with the art, with the Diodato art.
God, and I just don't get it, Paul, because the art is spectacular.
He had some good moments, but
it's like listening to Wayne talk about Humberto Ramos. I just don't get it.
Mm. You know? Well, it'll have to grow on me if I want to keep buying Avengers, because I think he's the new regular artist.
I know, and it's amazing.
You're killing me.
Oh, it's like you're on the outside of that joke now, aren't you?
It hurts a little bit. It stings a little bit. It won't stop me from making it with Wayne, but it stings a little bit. So on the other side of the pond, DC released Batman and Red Hood number 20 this week. You know, this is the second issue following the death of Robin. Or is it the third? I think it's the third issue, actually, because the last one was Batman and Red Robin. So, Tim, you read this one. What'd you think?
Boy, it's tough for me to put a finger on this one. I liked everything. I was totally on board. And then they did the Batman reveal. And I'm like, wow, that makes so much sense, but I'm so annoyed now. Because I really liked where it was going.
Oh,
it was headed towards a reconciliation story, and then it wasn't.
Yeah,
and then it was like, oh, well, there's never going to be a reconciliation story, is there?
Yeah. And then, like, Batman Bruced it up, is what he did.
Yeah.
Like, you know? Well, I will say, it says it takes place before Red Hood and the Outlaws number 19, which was a reconciliation issue.
So how does that work? Did you read the 19?
Yes, I did read 19.
And so, you know, at the end of this book, you know, Red Hood goes charging off, and, you know, it's like, we are done, sir. Good day, sir. I said good day. Right? And, you know, so you're like, okay, well, Red Hood and Batman are done. So tell me about how the book that came before this one fixed all that.
Well, it doesn't really flow. The continuity doesn't really match up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's Because in Red Hood and the Outlaws, that was Red Hood and the Outlaws number 18 that I read. So maybe they reconciled and then they unreconciled.
I don't understand, because they were leading it up to reconciliation through Red Hood and the Outlaws. Like, I don't know how they decided to F this up, because you would think they would have discussed, hey, we're going to use your character in Batman and Robin.
Yeah, no, okay, there it is. Red Hood and the Outlaws 18 is where they reconciled, is where they Bruce had a naked man hug with Jason Todd, and I guess this came after.
Huh.
So, if you ask me if I like this, I did, but I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm conflicted. Someone who's not conflicted, talk.
I thought it was a little forced. I thought the Bruce, like, I want to go out, I want to beat the hell out of some people. It doesn't really feel like Bruce, first of all.
I particularly enjoyed that he had special gloves for the bad guys. You know, so we're talking around it. What Bruce decides as a family outing for he and, you know, quality time with Jason.
I love this, by the way.
Is that he has identified all the assassins who were gunning for Damian when Talia put a $500 million bounty on his head. And, you know, Bruce is a little put out that anybody would, you know, put a hit out on a 10-year-old boy, much less his son, his dead son. So, you know, Bruce wants to go teach these guys that that's not appropriate behavior. And so he and Jason saddle up. They fly out to this remote location and open up a gigantic bat-sized can of whoop-ass on these guys. And Batman tells them, I'm wearing special gloves. And they're these electric gloves that are fucking up these guys' nervous systems in their hands, so they can never pull a trigger ever again. I thought that was fantastic. That is the kind of thing Batman should be doing all the time.
Like, right there, that's the line. He was at the line. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool, but wow. And then he went past the line, Aaron. He went past the line when he basically said, yeah, we did all that sort of as like the warm up. Here's the main dish. I need you to help me. Yeah. I need you to help me by reliving the worst moment of your life ever. And you need to do that right now. Spazoid is basically what he said.
On the one hand, you know, I get that Bruce is behaving badly. But, well, you know,
compared to last issue, this is.
No, I get it. I mean, you know, he's trying to resurrect his son, and he's doing everything he can. So, you know, last time is, well, maybe I could make my son a Frankenstein monster. That sounds like a good idea. Damn you, Tim Drake, for ruining that. So they go, well, okay, my other Robin, you know, he came back from the dead. Maybe he's got a secret. And so he's going to push him there. So I get that this is poor behavior on the part of Batman. But what I don't get is Jason's reaction. Because, yeah, worst moment of your life, but maybe you have the opportunity to do something here. I think Jason's reaction was a little untoward, as well as, you know, Batman's question of him. I think they were both wrong, but I think Jason was maybe more wrong. He had an opportunity there that he could have separated himself and said, I can do this for Damian.
Yeah, I don't think that's I'm with Jason Todd on this one, because this whole time, this helping him, staying at the Batcave, you know, curing him of the Joker serum, all this stuff was like Bruce saying, I care about you, and then Jason's like up the whole time.
Yeah,
and so I could see why he'd be like, fuck you. I don't know. That makes sense to me.
Well,
it would be nice if he like got past it, but I could see why he wouldn't. Paul, you've been quiet about this book. What did you think?
I don't know. I mean, the ending didn't really connect with me. Like when Bruce is like, get up, hit me. Like you said, I mean, I know Bruce is grieving, but I don't know. Maybe I've seen too much Bruce grieving, and I'm ready to move past it.
Yeah, you're not. We're not done with Bruce grieving.
I know.
That'll be edited. Sorry. I think that you're going to see the downward spiral up until you see Batman and Nightwing. Because nobody's bull to call Bruce on his bullshit, but I think that Nightwing could.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where we're leaning.
I think we're still a good 2-3 months away from that.
Yeah, I'm totally not interested in Batman and Batgirl. I might skip that one.
So how did you enjoy Carrie Kelly's appearance in this book?
I liked it.
I know you're talking quite a bit because you're not talking to me.
No, I liked it quite a bit, actually. I enjoyed her appearance. I don't know what they're setting her up to be, whether it be Batman or not Batman, whether it be Robin or
God damn, Paul, don't you say that.
Or the new Oracle, maybe. But regardless, I like her characterization quite a bit.
Yeah.
In fact, like I said, I mentioned this last time. I like her characterization more than I liked it in Dark Knight Returns.
Well, there's actually a character here.
Yeah, she's not just like a fan,
right?
Who got lucky. You know, she actually is a strong character.
Yeah, no, I dig her, and I'm enjoying her in the book, and I can't wait until she becomes Robin. That's going to be amazing.
best Robin ever. Best female Robin ever.
So, you know, Tim, I know that you read Fearless Defenders number 4 this week.
I love Fearless Defenders.
Isn't it such a damn good book?
It's a really good book.
So what'd you like so much about it, Tim?
Hippolytia is phenomenal. Hippolytia is like, why aren't we fighting more? they're fighting half the issue, and she's like, there's not enough fight, basically. And she's just it's tough to make Valkyrie look modern and sensible, right. But Hippolytia pulls that off, and that's pretty good.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I'm thoroughly digging the book, and this month's cover with the paper dolls.
Pretty cool.
Well, it's fantastic.
Cool.
They really had some nice covers on this book, and you know they give you a paper doll of Valkyrie, you know, in her underwear, which, you know, yay. Two different costumes that she can wear, her regular Valkyrie costume and then her Rage Valkyrie costume.
Oh, I like that reveal too.
Yeah, that was – I gotta tell you, this book is hot. God, I love this book. Paul?
You know, I enjoy the book. I'm not quite as psyched for it as you guys are.
Paul, I need you to turn to the page where Danny Moonstar turns into her Valkyrie form and tell me you're not psyched about this book, Paul.
Well, you know, I'm not. I don't. This is my first experience with Danny Moonstar. Is this book
really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else has she been in for me to have enjoyed?
The New Mutants.
New Mutants is pretty good.
Who read that shit?
You weren't a New Mutants guy back in the day.
No.
Oh,
really?
Not even when Liefeld was on it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Hmm. This is information that should have come up in the background check, but okay.
I slightly raised.
Yeah, Tim, you and I'll need to revisit some considerations that we've made. So.
Yeah. So when you guys are talking about Danny Moonstar, I'm like, who?
Oh.
Well, I mean, I know who she is now, but the first time you guys were talking about her, like in issue 1, I'm like, okay, not getting it.
All right. Well, you know, there was kind of a huge, you know, New Mutants Asgard crossover back in the day. I want to say it was Adam Hughes that drew those books, and they were just beautiful.
Yeah.
It may not have been Adam Hughes, may have been somebody else, but they were just beautiful books.
And yep. Yeah, and it was something that you didn't think would work when they first mentioned it.
Exactly.
And it worked really, really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Fearless Defenders is a great, fun book. It's kind of – I don't know. It's hard to explain. I'm not getting really any team books right now that I can think of. So it's kind of nice to have this one.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, you are kind of getting a team book in Thor God of Thunder.
Well,
because, you know, you've got Thor, and
it's the Thor.
Oh, you know, I'm really glad that Jason Aaron's answered the question, what's better than Thor? How about 3 Thors and then 3 Thorettes, basically?
Yeah.
Fuck, yeah.
Now, I will say, you know, Slave Thor, you know, the youngest of the 3 Thors, you know, mm-hmm. who is doing his whole, you know, Conan impersonation, being a slave to Gore the God Butcher. And he meets these 3 young women, 2 of which are pretty steaming hot. Mm-hmm. And they reveal too soon that these are his granddaughters.
Yeah.
because there really needed to be that awkward Luke and Leia moment where, you know, one's about to get it on with granddad and then you find out that you're related. Or even better, it happens, then you find out they're related. Because that's just hot.
Well, she did say, I've been having impure thoughts about my grandfather.
Yeah, yeah. I needed there to have been some activity, you know, before we go to the reveal. Just to,
you're a bit of a sick man, Aaron.
Oh, come on.
I thought it was pretty cool when the youngest – we'll just call him youngest Thor. When youngest Thor is sitting down there and he sees Mjolnir and he's just kind of slowly reaching his hand out towards it.
Yeah.
And modern Thor's like, that's mine basically. I love how he has hammer envy. It's fantastic.
Hammer envy.
And then at the end where they're like, you know, now we let the hammers do the talking.
Oh, that was a great page.
Yeah.
I want that as a poster. I really do.
So, Aaron, I know you dropped out during the God Butcher arc, and now you're back on.
Yeah.
For God Bomb. Yeah. Are you digging the book now?
I am. I did not much care for the first issue or two of the God Butcher story arc, but I'm really digging this. I have all of those books now. And so I'm going to go back and reread them, and I might enjoy them as a big chunk, but I wasn't enjoying it as a monthly. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure I'll come around and enjoy that as well, because this is really good. This is really good storytelling. It's something different that we're getting to see with Thor. I'm digging it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, and I'm enjoying God Bomb much more than I enjoyed the God Butcher, and I liked the God Butcher, but you know, God Bomb is just – seeing the three Thors together is really what's making this one.
Yeah.
And Aaron, could you see another arc with them traveling around space in the Viking ship, all three of them?
I would buy that book.
I could see another six issues of that.
Yeah, cool. I'd just be okay if they traveled to America in an El Camino. I'd buy that book as well.
I think I would buy pretty much any book that the three Thors are in. You know,
I'm loving the book. I liked. I gotta say, the whole God Bomb premise itself, there's a bomb that's gonna blow up all the gods. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the MacGuffin's not doing anything for me. It's the character's reaction to it that I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
You know? And I do particularly love when, you know, our Thor, or as they refer to him as Thor the Avenger, you know, tells old Thor, you know, oh, by the way, there's no more ale. And he's like, Hela's pale bosom, boy, go polish thine hammer or practice growing a beard before I cast thy ass overboard. I'm like, polish thine hammer. I think in this scenario, the hammer is, in fact, his penis. I think that's what old Thor is telling him to go do.
Yeah, he's basically telling him, find something else to do is stop drinking my beer.
It's a good book. It's very enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
So, speaking of good books, Aaron, I know you loved Justice League of America number 3 this week. Did you not?
I did not.
You did not?
I did not, in fact, enjoy Justice League of America number 3. And I found it – we've had three issues now for not a lot going on. And, you know, I read it, and the next day I was like, did I finish that? And I went back and I opened it up. Yeah, I sure did. And that's not a good sign. You know, that the ending of the book doesn't leave you going, oh, yeah, that was great, or I can't wait to figure out what happens next time. I think I'm at a place where I'm about to come off of this book.
I think I'm at the place where I'm going to come off of this book.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the writing or the art. I know I definitely have issues with the art. I am not enjoying the art on this book.
No, nor am I.
You know, David Finch is a great artist. Rushed David Finch is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah. The only thing I'm enjoying about the book is Catwoman, and there's just not enough of her, you know. And I'm – while I really enjoy Green Arrow, I don't enjoy New 52 Green Arrow. And there's just not enough here to keep me here. And, you know, I really love the character of Stargirl, and they've really kind of sidelined her. And I understand that that's part of the story, but that's not what I want to read.
This just feels like a storybook. Like it's specifically done to meet a certain need, and without any actual investment in the characters and making them interesting or any of that. I mean, there's nothing there. It's literally just, for me, it just feels like they're just trying to fill in some gaps for the Trinity War that's coming up.
Yeah. I don't care for it.
Yeah, I'm out. I think I'm out on this one.
Well, I, because I'm feeling the peer pressure, I'm out as well.
Bam! That just happened.
There you go.
If you bought issue 4, I would probably disown you.
Well, I'm still out.
That's $8 that DC Comics lost just like that.
Wait, $8?
Well, because it's $3.99 book, isn't it?
Oh, you mean from both of us? Yes, yes.
Well, math, how much Paul.
Math is hard. I need Andrew here to add that up for me.
You need the accountant.
Yeah, so if two people are out of a $3.99 book, that means that DC has lost $11.50.
Paul used to work in the mortgage and loan business, so.
Indeed, yeah.
Clearly.
Give me a buzz. I will do your taxes for you.
Paul, so I know that we have had mixed reviews about Superboy, and you know, I think that we're both in after Hell on Earth. Tell me what you thought of Superboy number 20.
So Superboy number 20 featured the first. It is the first issue of the new writer Justin Jordan, who's taking over for. You know, it was I think Scott Lobdell and Tom DeFalco and a couple of different folks have written the book, and Justin Jordan is the new regular artist or the new regular writer. I slipped when I said regular artist because there were no less than 4 artists on this.
Yeah, book. Yeah, you got R.B. Silva, Rob Lean, Kenneth Rocafort, and Chris Cross.
And you know, in the art style,
didn't I just see something about that?
Cross died. Chris is okay.
Okay, all right, just
something
checking.
Like that.
Yeah. So Chris did this book. So the art styles all very different. So they're it very jarring. As for the book itself, I didn't like it. I did not like issue 20. Issue 19 was the big WTF issue that featured Superboy, you know, the reveal that Superboy was the clone of the son of Superman and Wonder Woman, or Superman and Lois Lane, and all these revelations. And then Superboy number 20 just kind of felt meh to me. Yeah.
No, I agree. The book just isn't getting to a place that I'm happy with yet.
I don't think they know what they want to do with it. That's what it feels like to me. They don't know what they want to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, do they? Because it's not. It just seems disjointed. Like, depending on who's the artist, it's either a fun book or a serious book. Or, you know, they don't seem to know where they want to take the story. They don't seem to want to know who the supporting cast is. They just really don't seem to know what they're doing with it. And it's very frustrating for me as a reader,
right,
to read as good as the book was during Hell on Earth. And then immediately after Hell on Earth, they had a really terrible issue. And then the following issue was good again. And now we're back to a terrible issue.
Yeah.
So who knows? The odds are that issue 21 will actually be pretty good. So I will give issue 21 a shot. If it does not significantly improve, since it's the second issue of the new writer, I am going to be out.
So I'm trying to figure something out about Crypto in this book.
Yes, sir.
Is he wearing?
He's a dog ear.
But I'm trying to determine: is he wearing a super shield collar, or is that a super shield bandana?
That is a good question.
Because if it's in a bandana, I'm there.
I don't know. I will investigate for next week's show.
I need it to be a bandana, Paul. Make that happen.
It's a bandana. Just assume it's a bandana.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm glad I could help.
So are you in for 21?
I'm in for 21. Okay. And like I said, we'll see how 21 is. If it's good, then you know, then it'll sucker me into another issue. If it's not good, then I'm definitely out.
And here we get to the portion of the show that I like to call Tim's bathroom break. Digital Comics. Paul, go.
All right. So we're going to talk about some digital first books this week. We did not have a regular format episode last week. We had Aaron's Drunken Ramblings from Fear the Con 6.
I back it up. Wade said I was brilliant.
Brilliant.
Wade said you were brilliant, Aaron. Brilliant.
By the way, I don't know if I've said this. I'm fundamentally against digital first. I don't know if anybody knew my stance on that, but I wanted to make sure I made it clear.
I was unaware of that.
Well, now you know.
I was aware of that, but thank you for clarifying.
Well, you're welcome. I like to take this opportunity sometimes to voice my opinions. I have a mic. I can use it until Aaron edits it out.
Well, I thought you were going to make comments on how I was brilliant last week.
I don't know, because you didn't hit the record button until after I left.
But you could have listened to the show.
I could have.
So, Paul, yes. Adventures of Superman number one, Chris Somney, Jeff Parker.
Yes, the much-anticipated Jeff Parker, Chris Somney introduction to Adventures of Superman since the Orson Scott Card two-parter was scrapped. And the second issue, written and drawn by Jeff Lemire. Both are out now on Comixology. They'll be collected, I believe, in the next couple of weeks in print. Aaron, what did you think of the Jeff Parker, Chris Somney story?
Number one, Chris Somney was born to draw Superman.
Oh, I know, right?
I probably need to clarify that. Pre-New 52 Superman.
Correct. Now, not only that, I should also note that the cover on the digital series, at least for this first story arc or whatever, is Brian Hitch.
Yes.
And he did a pretty – considering how hard of a hard time I've been giving him, I do want to say he did a bang-up cover.
Yeah. No, I like the cover for it. But Chris, back to Chris Somney, God, I loved his pencils on this book.
Oh, yeah.
It's just beautiful, very Superman-ish. You know, you get to see Superman doing all manner of cool stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Jeff Parker's writing on the book is spot on. I mean, I thought it was pitch perfect throughout. Totally dug it. I wish we had more Superman stories like this.
I think DC, if now that they have Jeff Parker in their stable, would be foolish not to get him and Chris Somney on Action Comics.
Yeah.
After Scott Lobdell does his fill-in issues,
yep,
because Andy Diggle left the book, they really need to get this team on the book. And I wouldn't doubt that they aren't trying, because, I mean, everyone was really anticipating this issue. And there's one shot where Superman is, like, flying past a newspaper stand.
Yes.
It's also the shot they use for the title page.
Yeah.
Or the creative team listing. And it's just perfect.
Yes,
it is perfect.
Now, part two, or issue two, I should say, is a story called Fortress, and it's written and drawn by Jeff Lemire. Now, Jeff Lemire is an acquired taste.
His art is definitely an acquired taste.
Yeah, it is very indie. It is very hyper stylized. I happen to really enjoy Jeff Lemire. I loved his Sweet Tooth book. But, you know, honestly, I think that there are a lot of folks, I would number Wayne among them, who would not enjoy this book. You know, that they would not enjoy how hyper stylized and sketchy the artwork is. But for the story that it was telling, I thought it was very appropriate. You know, and the story that it's telling is two boys playing pretend. You know, I'm Superman, you're the parasite, you know, that kind of thing. And it is I thought it was a well-told story. And again, pre-New 52, you know, you've got lots of little, you know, you're seeing kind of what they're playing in their mind's eye, you know, so they're fighting General Zod, pre-New 52 General Zod, where he looks like a policeman, you know, the parasite, Mr. Mixelplick, things like that. And at the end of it, you see that Superman was watching and listening the whole time, you know, and cheered at what they say, you know, because it ends up with, okay, next time you can be Doomsday, but I still get to win. He's, no way, Doomsday's way more powerful. And the other guy says, so? It doesn't matter if he's more powerful or not. I still get to win. Well, why is that? And he says, because Superman always wins. And you see that Superman's reaction as he hears that sitting on the roof of this barn. And I thought it was a sweet story.
It's a sweet story. It's not something we haven't seen before.
No.
Which was my only issue with it. I'm like, well, it seems like I've seen this before.
Yeah.
Maybe not with Superman, but I know I've seen it before.
Yeah.
That being said, it was well told. And Jeff Lemire's art, I do like. It's very unique. Nobody is pretty in a Jeff Lemire book.
Yeah, they've all got jug ears, you know.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And not as much as issue one, but this is the, you know. I think they really started off on the right foot with this Adventures of Superman stuff. And I think new issues come out every Monday.
Yeah.
Like every Monday morning. And so, you know, I really look forward to picking those up just as much as I look forward to Justice,
yeah,
on Tuesdays. And, you know, Batman Little Gotham when that comes on, and Batman Beyond and Superman Beyond. Hey, speaking of which, Aaron, you got Superman Beyond in the other day, didn't you?
I did. I got the trade paperback in. It looks sweet. I haven't read it yet, but it looks sweet.
You need to get on that so that we can talk about it.
Yes, sir. You're kind of bossy, but okay.
Really, I feel the fact that you haven't read it yet is very disappointing to me.
Poor thing. I don't know how you live with such crushing disappointment in your life, Paul.
I get used to it.
So another digital first this week, the free Guardians of the Galaxy Infinite Comic number 4 featuring Groot. What'd you think, Paul?
So I do want to clarify that I feel that this, more so than even some of the other ones, was an Infinite Comic in name only. It didn't seem to take advantage of the digital form of the Infinite format as much as some of the other ones, such as the Gamora one.
I disagree.
That I thought was really.
I thought the transitions were fantastic.
Really, I felt they were. It just felt like a regular digital comic book to me.
You know,
it didn't seem to have that animation feel that some of that I've gotten used to from Infinite Comics.
Oh no, I thought that the you have the scene where she discovers Groot and that all populates in, you know, rather uniquely. And then there are moments where she's looking around the room, and so, you know, you see her planting Groot in a pot and then looking out the window. I mean, I don't think it's as intensely infinite, to use the Marvel term, as some of the other stuff has been, but I thought it used the space well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, regardless of my issues, I mean, and even though they aren't issues, it's still a great book. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I only had one minor issue with the story, and it's how quickly Groot got his size.
You know, I was going to ask about that, actually, because, you know, Rocket Raccoon just got the shard of Groot in the middle of the battle.
Right.
In Guardians of the Galaxy, I believe it was issue 1.
Right.
And are they trying to establish that Groot can change his size? Because I don't recall that.
Well, you know, in the prior run of Guardians of the Galaxy done by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, you know, Groot was reduced to the size of a twig, you know, after having been mostly blown up. And, you know, Rocket Raccoon tended that pot and grew Groot back over the period of several issues. And, you know, we see that happening again in Guardians of the Galaxy number 1, where he rescues the sliver of Groot and puts him in a pot. Well, this shows that, you know, Groot gets his size back, you know, like in a day or less, an hour, minutes.
Yeah, minutes, really, because, I mean, she sticks him in a pot. There's a fight happening outside and he jumps on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how fast it is. Now, and I will say Baby Groot is cute.
Baby Groot is cute. But, you know, it bugs me that they collapse the time so much on that, because I think that is a neat aspect of a story that he can regenerate, but it's going to take him a while. But, you know, I complained about Guardians of the Galaxy issue 1 about Groot being reduced, you know, to a potted plant, you know, in the first issue, when we had seen that previously in the DNA stories. And now we're doing it for a third time. It really kind of reduces how fun and imaginative that was when it first happened. And now it just seems commonplace, you know?
You know, there's got to be something to Groot besides him being the new Kenny, you know?
Right.
The Guardians of the Galaxy version of Kenny.
Right. Where
you blow Groot up, but he'll be back.
Yeah.
You know, there's more to him than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas I enjoyed the story, it's very, you know, it's essentially the Iron Giant with Groot in it.
Well, particularly that last shot. I mean, that's exactly what I got as well. Look, he's the Iron Giant, or he's the Wooden Giant, whatever you want to call him. But, yeah, it very much had the Iron Giant feel at the end of the book.
Yeah. Not a bad book. Not a bad book at all.
Not at all.
Just a little derivative, a little, you know, stereotypical.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I have yet to see that Bendis knows what to do with Groot. You know, we enjoyed his Rocket Raccoon. His Star-Lord is really coming into his own. We enjoyed Gamora.
Yeah.
But as far as Groot and Drax,
you know what I feel like he's doing with Groot? Hmm. I feel like he's a bad comedian cheering the band. You know, how about that band, everybody? You know, you can't get your own, you know, laughs and applause. So, you know, you cheer for the guy who can. And I think that's what he's doing here. You know, he hasn't figured out how to run Groot on his own. And so he's just going to do those things that he identified that worked for Abnett and Lanning.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, and it's like you said, it's derivative. You know, it is. You know, it's a Star Trek movie. You know, we saw that the scene that works so well in Star Trek the Motion Picture is the beauty shot flyby of the Enterprise. Let's do that in every other movie, you know. And this is kind of the same thing. Well, what worked with Groot, he says, I am Groot, and he grows back from a potted plant. Let's do that.
Yeah, three times. Let's do that twice in 1 month.
Let's do that every fucking issue. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
So Paul, what's coming out next week?
All right. Well, next week we have Avengers: Enemy Within #1, which is a the opening chapter of a Avengers Captain Marvel crossover, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. We have Age of Ultron #8. So we are in the home stretch on that one. There's only 10 issues there. If you've been listening to the show, you'll know how much we like Indestructible Hulk. And actually, Mikey Mason, who we were talking about earlier, I gave him, I think, almost every issue. I didn't have the first issue, but I gave him almost every issue of Indestructible Hulk, and he seems to really be enjoying it. The new Mark Waid Indestructible Hulk book, the first volume hardcover, comes out next week. Nova #4 comes out next week. Aquaman, the hardcover, that is the second arc of the Geoff Johns Aquaman New 52 book, comes out in hardcover next week. Let's see. Anything worth it? Hey, Aaron, are we on Vibe #4 next week?
If I'm out of Justice League of America, I'm out of Vibe. That's a twofer.
All right. Well, Nightwing #20 comes out next week, as does Supergirl #20.
Yeah. So wait a minute. Are you into Vibe next week?
No, if you're out, I'm out.
$16 we just cost DC.
But you are in on Nightwing #20, right?
Fuck yeah. Yes, I am, yes. I had to think for a second, does that book suck? No, I like that book. We're good.
Supergirl #20, which is the second part of the Supergirl Power Girl arc, that I enjoyed the hell out of the first issue. So the second part comes out next week.
Good.
See. Yeah,
sounds like a busy week next week.
Not really. I mean, a lot of hardcovers. Battlestar Galactica #1 from Dynamite Entertainment comes out next week. Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning.
Oh, yeah. I got to get that one.
Mark Waid's Green Hornet #2. I know you're into that.
You're getting that with me, Paul, right?
Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah.
Do I have to?
Yes, you do.
Fine. I don't even like original Battlestar Galactica.
I know, right? Isn't that awesome?
You suck. you know, of course, the usual stuff from Valiant, Bloodshot, Exo Manowar, but that's pretty much it. It's looking like a bit of a lackluster week next week.
Unless
you're into, you know, I mean, there's a lot of hardcovers if you've missed out on stuff. But as far as the regular weekly floppies, nothing is tickling the pickle.
Well, we'll see if we can come up with something for you, Paul.
Well, I tell you what, you notice that Paul mentions this pickle kills the show.
Yeah, I caught that.
Yeah.
What just happened there?
Well, you know,
did I make it awkward?
Maybe we all had seen too much of your pickle at Fear the Con. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I've had enough. I've had enough of the pickle.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, you have a good week.
All right,
bye,
guys.
Everybody.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.
Was right. I could say that. I'm gonna relocate my bowels. They're hanging too low.